Good afternoon and welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. Last week on this program, we invited representatives with state and federal emergency experience and responsibilities onto the show to help us understand how government prepares to handle major emergencies. Today, we are taking emergency preparedness to the personal level. How should you be prepared? How do first responder agencies expect you to be prepared so that they can focus on individuals or communities in dire need? Things like, do you have an emergency plan, emergency food supplies? If you have a senior or disabled person living with you or living independently in the community, what is their plan in an emergency? If you have pets or animals in your care, what is your emergency plan for them? If you need to go to a shelter, can you take your pet with you? All good things to think about before you're in an emergency. Today, we've invited experts knowledgeable in all these areas to walk us through being prepared. So I'd like to introduce our guests from the Municipality Office of Emergency Management. Sounds very important. We have Lexi Trainer. Hi, Lexi.
Hey, how's it going?
Very glad to have you. And I know you had to scurry over from another presentation, so we're really happy to have you. We also have Laura Atwood with the Anchorage Animal Care and Control.
Hi,
welcome,
hi.
Laura. You're back.
Yes.
I remember having you before, so welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
And then from the Statewide Independent Living Council of Alaska, we have Heidi Frost. Welcome, Heidi.
Hi. Nice to meet you.
And hopefully an emphasis there will be on people who may have mobility issues or disabilities. That's an audience that might have special needs, and planning ahead is a very good idea. So
absolutely.
So we're going to kind of cover this basically from the responsibility of the individual to be ready. Of course, things could happen where you're not able to exactly fend for yourself, but the idea is that you do the best you can for as long as you can. I want to invite people who are listening, if you've got questions about things that we're talking about here today, or even if you've been in a situation where you had to rely on services, or you had to fend for yourself for a period of time, or you had to use your emergency kit, we'd love to hear your stories, because stories help people remember the right thing to do. So you can call us at 550-8433 in Anchorage, or 1-888-353-5752 statewide. And we can also take email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. And just before we get started, I just want to alert folks, we've got on Hometown Alaska's webpage, I have linked many resources that if you want to explore this, so you listen to the show today and you think, boy, I think I need to get ready. We have some places to send you that will help you with creating, you know, a sheltering in place kit or a FASCO, you know, I've got to run out the door. What should you put in that? If you have members of your family that have mobility issues, how to think about that. And of course, your pets,
yeah.
How to think about that. So www.alaskapublic.org is one place for lots of links to useful information. And of course, we've got the city's Office of Emergency Management Emergency Preparedness site, which is an excellent site that has it breaks down a lot of information based on types of disaster or types of need. So there's a lot. There's a lot out there. That's not the issue. The issue is people sitting down and taking the time to get ready. And, of course, our show is an attempt to get you to sit down and think about it and get some good tips. So I'm going to start with Lexi, because you're sort of an overall person. And my first question is really, how does an emergency person get the average citizen to care and think about this, and maybe schedule the time with their family or themselves to actually confront this? It's scary.
It is. And a lot of people come to me and ask me, like, okay, well, how can I get started? Or they'll come to me at like a health fair. And I have heard the greatest way that some of these people get started with these. We live in a generation of procrastinators, and some of the people have come up to me and said that they were watching The Walking Dead, and they saw FEMA in there, and they realized that people didn't have supplies, so they were going and raiding the FEMA vans there. And after seeing that, they were like, wow, I need an emergency kit.
Wow. Well, there you go. Popular
yes.
culture can help.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So I like using things to kind of connect with the people and encourage them to get their kit started, whether it's personal stories, like you were saying, or pop culture references.
Do you find younger people or older people or people in the middle of, I mean, who comes to you looking for information?
So
at health fairs and places like that.
So it tends to be like the senior citizens, kind of the older generations that are asking for this information, which is what makes me laugh because they're the ones that usually have the kits together. Whereas the people who are like maybe between 30 and 50 right now, they're like, oh, yeah, I should probably do that. And those under 30 are like, that's a thing. So it kind of varies. But we are trying to reach all of the different age groups. And I think that by using pop culture references right mm-hmm. now, that's how we're getting that younger age group.
Do you do presentations at schools, too?
Not at schools, but we do presentations throughout the community. If anybody needs someone, we can go to workplaces and do a presentation. We do them on personal preparedness or how to keep a business going.
I did see that on your site. You know, if you do have a business and you have employees, you're
yes.
kind of somewhat responsible at that
yes.
moment. So there is information on the municipality's emergency preparedness website for
yes.
businesses, too.
And I also go out to the local libraries. I try to go during story time or right before that, and I'll give out coloring books like Ready Wrigley. And so it's about a little dog who's getting ready for different emergencies. And you can get specific ones. Like I was at the Lusac Library earlier this week, and I was giving out Ready
Wrigley
for winter. Wow, say that 10 times fast.
Well, you know, I was thinking about kids and parents and the need to have a family plan. And I thought some parents might think, oh, I've got this 8-year-old that's worrying about the world already, and mm-hmm. I don't want to add to that burden.
Mm-hmm.
I did see things on YouTube, for example, you know, emergency preparedness videos where children are participating or even giving out the information.
Yes.
And that might be a way
it's
for
important.
Parents
mm-hmm.
who want to tackle this but don't want to, you know,
scare
a child
yeah.
or add to their burden of worries that
yeah.
might, you know, be there. So I thought that might be a good idea. I hadn't
yeah.
heard about the coloring books.
So ready.gov actually has it for multiple age groups. You can go in and they have coloring books or puzzles that you can do, and it talks about it in a way that children can understand or that will make them feel a little more comfortable. And it talks about how preparedness can make it a little easier later on. And
if they have some of their favorite things.
Yeah,
in
it
the
reminds
kit.
Them to, yeah. you know, pack the favorite bear or blanket or something that might not be used every
mm-hmm,
day.
Because mm-hmm. scary things are tough to raise,
yeah.
but planning could help.
But I think that it helps.
Yes, Heidi.
When you prepare, if you are doing it in a positive, not in a scared, as a parent, not in a scared way, but in a positive way, then the children are
mm-hmm.
okay, we're preparing for this.
Yeah.
We have a plan.
Yeah.
We know what to do. We
Mom
know where to go.
Mom doesn't seem freaked out.
Yeah.
Dad
Mom
doesn't
seem freaked out. Yeah.
My big sister doesn't seem freaked
right.
out. Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe
and we know where to go in case of an emergency. If everybody's scattered, we're going to meet here.
Yeah.
And so having that information, I think, might give them a sense of security.
Some yeah. reassurance. Yeah.
Yeah. I was talking to a small child the other day. He was about 4 years old. And I asked her if she knew what getting ready for a disaster meant. And she's just looking at me. Of course, she's really shy because I'm a stranger. And her mom looks at her, and she made a reference to some child's TV show.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, do you remember when they got ready for the fire? And she was like, oh, and, you know, got really excited. So I think that a lot of children's shows are kind of putting that out there in a way that they can talk about it, too.
That's good. I was thinking, I have a nephew who's he's older now, but when he was young, he was just burdened by worrying about everything. And I thought about my brother and sister-in-law and how they were careful about that with him, not to.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, I'm going to just remind folks, if you've just tuned in, we're doing kind of personal responsibility in an emergency. Last week, we dealt with what government agencies are prepared to do, because it's kind of reassuring to know they're ready and that they practice all the time. But, you know, are we ready personally in our own homes or apartments? our cars? Are we ready? We've got a series of guests here. We have Lexi Trainer from the Municipality's Office of Emergency Management. Laura Atwood is here from Animal Care and Control, because pets are a big part of getting right. through something.
Absolutely.
And then Heidi Frost is here from the Statewide Independent Living Council of Alaska, which really focuses on folks who might have mobility needs or disabilities that might make a disaster additionally challenging. So we hope to cover all those topics, and we welcome your calls at 550-8433 or an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. If you've survived an emergency and you did something really smart to plan for it, we'd love you to share your story with us. So I've got another question for Lexi, and Heidi and Laura, chime in if you've got something to add, but the whole idea of our dependency on cell phones kind of freaks me out. I still have a landline because I thought, well, if, yeah, I know. I feel like I'm a growing minority. But what is the word? I mean, what do you think about our dependency on cell phones? And is that something we shouldn't be freaking out about? Because we might have texting capacity when we don't have calling capacity. That's some of the stuff I've read.
So landlines will work better during an emergency than a cell phone. I'm not entirely sure about the science behind why. I've just been told that. And then, of course, if you're using your cell phone, a lot of issues come up with that in, like, is it charged? Do you have enough service? Things like that. So if all of the cell towers were struggling because they're overloaded during an emergency, it actually is better to send a text. It uses much smaller space, so you can get it out a little easier. And then, of course, if you have an out-of-state contact instead of someone within Anchorage, that you can send information to, it's going to be a lot easier for it to get to them than it is to get to the person that's might be in the damaged area as well. So making
that's something to think about.
Yeah. So having that out-of-state contact can make a big difference, and it's going to be a lot easier for me to get a hold of my mother-in-law in Florida and tell her that I'm okay than it might be for me to get a hold of my husband in town and tell him that I'm okay.
Mm-hmm.
Also, with a text message, you can send it to multiple people at the same time, so you can let multiple people know that you're okay, and you don't have to worry about dropping a phone call.
So that's good. I think, and you wouldn't discourage people from landlines, you would say.
No, they're supposed to work better during an emergency.
Yeah. And I guess it's just an added expense. We're so mobile these days, and a lot of people I know are saving money by deciding, well, I don't need that, it's redundant. But you might think about it in terms of an emergency.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's see. I also, this came up last week, in an emergency. Sometimes people want to help. I mean, they got through it, and they sort of want to help. And I wondered if we did go through an emergency, and I did see something on the website that was EOC response teams.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually a premeditated teams that are put together. It's not like something you show up downtown and say, I want to sign up to help.
No.
So what is that? Because that takes a little planning. Can people, that's just volunteers. They're not emergency mm-hmm. responders. If somebody wants to do that, how do they do that?
So there's a thing called the Community Emergency Response Team, or CERT. And we're not currently running one through the municipality, but I know that the state does them with Michelle Torres. And so people can go and pretty much like get to know your neighbors, the people in town, and you guys are going to practice responding during an emergency. You get a special green vest, so people like can identify you as a citizen volunteer. So those groups get together and they can respond. It's a little more uniform. They have the training and experience, or maybe not experience, but at least the training necessary to
respond. Look like they take
respond.
A couple of FEMA classes, maybe online.
Yes.
I'm not sure, but
yes.
It looked like four classes. You don't just sign up. I mean, you do get some training.
It requires a decent amount of training, which is why we don't currently run one through the municipality.
Okay. But people should not just show up to volunteer. I know the medical people I had here last week said that can be a problem. Somebody's got a medical background, and they just start showing up, and it can be quite disruptive in a situation.
Yes. So if somebody is just showing up to volunteer, we can't necessarily check their credentials, and that, of course, brings liability with it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Something I noticed on the municipality's website was that the emergency preparedness information was in 17 languages, and
yes.
I thought that was fantastic. So
Good.
Yes. So we have the 10 frequently asked questions about evacuations and emergency sheltering currently on our website. And it has 10 questions about things like, what are the major hazards here? How do I stay informed? Where are emergency shelters located? So it gives out really good information about all of that. And, well, right now we have 17 up on the website.
Yes,
we're supposed to be adding 15 more languages. We just need to actually add them to the website.
Wow, that's amazing. I mean, I saw Hmong and Spanish and French and Arabic and some language that I'm not even sure what they are. Well, and they even have different script, different script. Yeah.
Well, we live in one of the most diverse cities in the entire U.S., so we're trying to make sure we reach everybody.
It's a really great idea. So let's see. Let's talk about an emergency plan and a kit. Those are two separate things. And I noticed on the municipality's website that they have a downloadable, like 12-page plan that takes you through really what you need to do. So can you just talk a little bit about it? It's something that you could download at home.
Yes.
You can fill it out. You could put, where should you put it? Mm-hmm. Who should have a copy? Tell us a little bit about that, Lexi.
So there is a fantastic 12-step guideline, I guess you could call it, to putting together an emergency kit so it's not a financial burden.
Mm-hmm.
You can do it in 12 weeks, 12 paychecks, 12 months. As long as you get started, that will make it so much easier if something were to happen. And so it just walks you through what you can get each week or each trip to the grocery store. So you're only spending, I think it's supposed to be less than $10 or $20 each time that you go.
Mm-hmm. The thing I was thinking about was more like contact information. So I might have missed that, and I want to make sure.
Oh, huh.
How do people find that thing?
That one's available on the state website.
Okay.
Yes.
What would do you happen to know that? I'll add it later.
I'll send it to you so you can have it on the website.
Okay, we'll add it on the website. So I like the idea that you don't have to go out and drop $500 or $250, on supplies just to be ready. You could you could stage it. If you're staging it, what's the most important stuff to do first?
So food and water, blankets, ways to stay warm. If you have pets, making sure that you have food and water for them as well. So making sure that's in something that you can easily access. If you're going to and that's for the shelter in place kit. So, if you're staying in your home for 3 to 7 days, making sure that you have all of this so you can have it if you need it. Flashlights, batteries, whistles, toilet paper. Everything.
Yeah, one of the basic things. For example, if the toilet doesn't flush anymore,
yes, right.
I mean we're so used to that. Unless you're used to hiking in the woods, but we actually don't want you to do what you do in the woods in the city. So you really do have to have plastic bags and things to close them with.
Mm-hmm.
And one side I read said, if you're more comfortable, you can line your toilet bowl with this trash bag so that you're comfortable with the situation and you're not on a bucket somewhere,
Yeah.
So those are things to think about.
As someone who grew up in rural Alaska, that's what I grew up using.
Yeah. You'd be completely comfortable with that. Yeah. Let's see. So how much food is dehydrated food better than canned food, or it doesn't matter?
It can go both ways.
Might get tired of one or the
other. Yeah, you might get tired of one or the other.
Plan for a little variety.
And then if you're going to have canned foods, you need a way to open it if they're not pop tops.
Which you might not think about.
Yes. And then if, let's say, they were exposed to water or something damaged it so that contaminants could actually get into the can or into the bag, like the meal prep bag. But the bagged ones are usually a little harder to open. Mm-hmm. But then also with those, you have to consider that you need water for it to even cook it. So do you have access to clean water, all of that? It's going to use a little more water than if you had a canned food. So,
right. So it almost sounds like it might be a good idea to have a variety.
Yes.
A bit of a variety. And also maybe some things that your family actually really likes.
Yeah. I don't know if they're going to like it afterwards, but you can try.
Oh, you mentioned 3 to 7, and when I look around on emergency websites, I see be prepared to shelter in place for 72 hours.
Mm-hmm.
But the state folks we had here last week were saying might be better to plan for 7 days in
place. Yes, we encourage people to do that.
Explain why that is. I mean, my guess is
everything is outside. It's going to take a while for it to get here. So the longer you can shelter in place, better.
Yes. So we do encourage 7 days. If you, it's better to be over-prepared than under-prepared. And if something huge were to happen here and you had to shelter in place for 5 days, if you had enough for 3 days, you would run out. It could take, you know, 3 to 5 days for emergency responders to get to you. Let's say you live up on the hillside and on a strange back road, and now that road has washed out because it was dirt and gravel, and now they can't get to you. So just important things like that to keep in mind. Like, they might not be able to respond right away for you, or they're helping an entire city of people, and there's only so many of them.
Right, which is one of the reasons we focused on personal responsibility, because the resources you might be using if you're in a non-emergency, you're not in dire need, might be diverted to you when there is someone who's in absolute desperate need. So to be mindful of that, I guess.
Yeah, and that's actually brings up something really important. Like, if you have maybe some kind of functional access need, or you're on medication, making sure that you have extra medication, or if it's some kind of controlled substance where you can't have that extra medication, having a copy of your prescription, or having it written down, you know, like how to contact your doctor and all, like the name of the medication or medications that you're on and how often you take them. Just so you have that, if say you show up at a shelter and you're on 5 medications, but you didn't bring them with you, and you don't remember what they're called because they all end in zine.
Yeah, right. Another piece of advice I read was, if you're on a number of medications, talk to your doctor about the ones that you absolutely must have every day, that something bad will happen if you don't have this every day, and make sure you're clear on that.
Yes.
And of course, like you said, you know what it is.
Will
doctors issue a prescription to you for an emergency kit?
Well, if you have, if you have a prescription and you have a copy of it when you go to the actual, you know, place to the pharmacy to fill it, you can make a copy of it, like take a picture of it or make a scan copy of it, so you can have that in there.
It's just basically for the information. It's not really a script that you can use and take to the pharmacy, but it's like you really do know the name of the medicine. You do know the amount that you need, that sort of thing.
Yes.
Okay. Well, we're going to take a tiny break here.
Okay.
We'll be back in about a minute. And this is Hometown Alaska, and I'm Kathleen McCoy.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 8 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. And today is a day set aside just to, as we're about to go into winter, whether it's an icy winter or a snow. Yeah. It might be just an icy winter and dark for a long time, or who knows? We might get a lot of snow. It's a good time to really think about, are you ready for an emergency? I want to just reintroduce my guests. I have Lexi Trainer from the municipality's Office of Emergency Management. I have Laura Atwood from the Anchorage Animal Care and Control, because we're going to spend a little bit of time during the show talking about a plan for your pets. Right now we've been talking about plans for humans and your family and yourself, but your pet is part of your family and you need a plan for that person too. And then we also have Heidi Frost with us, and there's some significant planning required for people who might be, you know, not able to run down a set of exit stairs, or maybe need medical equipment with them when they are evacuated. So there's a lot of issues to take up there. So we want to cover those as well. I'm going to jump back to Lexi here, and I also want to share our phone number for you if you do have questions or good survivor stories. We'd love to hear them. 550-8433 in Anchorage, or we can also take an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. Lexi, I'm going back to you, and invite Laura and Heidi to jump in at any time. But I was thinking about, the power goes out, Mm-hmm. I've got a freezer full of food. I've got a fridge full of food. Now, I did find this on your website, so it is available for people. So this is not a trick question. But I thought it was worth people knowing this. One of the items, it's called food safety during power outage. And it's suggested that if your fridge has been out of power for 4 hours, the food inside it, just the fridge, not the freezer, the food inside the fridge might not be okay anymore. So four hours. Another tip was don't open the fridge every 2 seconds to see what's in there because that will, it'll warm up faster.
Yes.
Let's see. A full freezer will hold the temperature for approximately 48 hours, 24 hours if it's half full and the door remains closed. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of something to think about. Is your freezer full? If you don't open it, it's good for 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
That's good to know. I'm sorry, I've got a frog in my throat. I also thought this was really interesting. If your food is kind of defrosted, but it still has ice crystals in it, or is at 40 degrees, you can still refreeze it.
Yes, but if it no longer has those ice crystals on it, you do not want to refreeze it. It needs to be either cooked and consumed, or it needs to be tossed, unfortunately.
Yeah. This also talks about going and getting dry ice. And so supposedly, what if the grocery store was open and you could go in and get some dry ice or the gas station?
That's a lot of assumptions, though.
That's what I'm thinking. I mean, it's nice to mention it, but unless you've got some dry ice handy,
Some people think, too, we live in Alaska. It's cold outside. Can I just put my stuff outside because outside's colder than here? No. Mm-hmm. We do not suggest that because the temperature warms up and then it gets cold again.
It
warms up.
Yeah.
That can potentially cause some issues with your food safety.
Right, right. Okay. So think about that. It's better to leave it in the fridge rather than to sort of put it in an ice chest, like a picnic ice chest. Leave it in the fridge as long as you can.
Yes.
So here's another one. Now, I don't think we're about to head into flooding season, but we do have floods in Alaska for sure. And I mean, when we looked at Hurricane Florence, the images of people, stuck in their cars or their cars drifting down the river that is the street, I thought these tips were interesting too. 6 inches of water will reach the bottom of most passenger cars, causing loss of control and possible stalling. So just 6 inches of water.
Mm-hmm.
A foot of water will float many vehicles. So that's just kind of scary. Imagine just drifting down the street with no control. 2 feet of rushing water can carry away most vehicles, including sport utility vehicles and pickup trucks. Do not attempt to drive through a flooded road. The depth of water is not always obvious. The road may be washed out under the water, and you could be stranded or trapped.
Yes. So FEMA has a big thing with that, a little phrase that they use, and it's called turn around, don't drown.
Mm-hmm.
So just a reminder for people that, if you don't know how deep the water is, turn around. I know that we saw the unfortunate incident with the two people that were in the back of the public safety vehicle, and they were crossing the water, and they did not make it as a result of the car being washed away.
Yeah.
That is a very real possibility. So if you see water, turn around. Don't drown.
Yeah. Okay. So don't brave it. Don't think, it only looks like it's up to my knee. I think I can do it.
No. Yeah, it's amazing the power of water.
Yeah, yeah. So that's more applicable to us in spring flooding, which we definitely get here. But I just had never seen it broken down quite like that. So, Heidi, we should talk a little bit more specifically about individuals who have mobility issues or are disabled. There's a lot there. For example, if you aren't able to speak, and the person who comes to your door does not know sign language, what are some of the biggest things people should think about?
If you have a communication issue or if you're deaf or hard of hearing, exactly. If you're hard of hearing and you use a hearing aid, make sure you have extra batteries, maybe an extra hearing aid. If you're deaf or if you have communication speech impediments, having a communication card available with you in your kit is really important. And that just has pictures of people and things. And so you can point, I need a doctor. I need food.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm okay, And using basic signs that everyone knows, like I'm okay and doing that. So that works really well.
I imagine the emergency kit that a person who has medical issues would be more complex than, you know, a 12-year-old member of a family.
So,
the things I was reading about and thinking about were, if you need medical equipment, do you have batteries for it? For example, if you need medication and you need it on an hourly rate, you need to be thinking in your kit, how will someone know this about
right.
me? So it sounds almost like a rather extensive medical details about what somebody would need.
And there is a publication that the state of Alaska puts out that's called the Get Ready Toolkit, and it kind of breaks that down for folks. But you're absolutely right. If you have, when you guys were talking about prescriptions, folks who are on Medicare or Medicaid or don't have insurance often run into this issue where they know they need to make a kit, but they aren't given any extras
in, right,
their,
okay.
in their monthly prescription or allotment.
Uh-huh.
And so then how do you get the pills that you need for your 7-day
right.
kit? And the only suggestions we have are see if you can get the samples from your doctor, how they often have samples of different drugs.
Right.
Or if you forget a pill one day, then go ahead and take that pill and put it into your kit.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the only ways that we've come up with that would work.
That's an important one.
Absolutely, I can't stress enough having a list of your prescriptions
mm-hmm.
And how important that is.
Maybe taking a snapshot of the prescription before you fill it, and you've got those on your phone, maybe something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Something that this is not necessarily people who don't see well, need glasses, or maybe rely on contact lenses, depending on what the disaster is, you could have smoke or dust or chemicals or fumes that might make it impossible for you to wear your contacts. So you might, be thinking about, well, do I have a pair of glasses with
right.
me? Or another suggestion I read was clear goggles so that you could put them over your,
mm-hmm.
if you really
uh-huh.
need your contact lenses. I mean, these are things you should think about because it'll be too late if you don't think about them.
Right. And if you have questions, your eye doctor might be, or your optometrist,
ophthalmologist, yeah.
Might be able to help you figure out what would work with your contacts or
mm-hmm.
with your glasses. They always say, make sure that you have at least one pair of glasses. They might be your last prescription, so they might not be as good, but having something in your kit
mm-hmm.
that is so, again, just is so important.
Yeah. Here's a couple of things. here's folks who have regular need for medication, and if you're one of these folks, sit down and think about it. Methadone, dialysis, infusion, chemo, or radiation therapy, what would you do in an emergency? Say you're in the middle of getting your chemo treatment and it's supposed to go on for a month, and think about it in advance, right?
Right, right. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
And talk to your provider. Make sure that they have a plan. Make sure that there's a backup place. If,
mm-hmm.
I think Lexi was talking about earlier, if you have, if you're on dialysis, know where their backup is. Know what,
right.
where to go. If they are the ones affected by the emergency, then who is their partner? Who will take you in?
Mm-hmm. Right. One of the things we talked about was this idea that people think of all hospitals, and we have three big ones here in Anchorage, but they might think, that's the beacon on the hill. If I can just get to the hospital, everything will be fine. But Lexi, you were talking about if dialysis is the issue, you may want to be more in contact with your dialysis.
Yes.
Rather than thinking, oh, I'll go to the hospital and I can get dialysis there.
Yes. So during an emergency, hospitals are going to be crowded and having a lot of people coming in for a lot of different issues. And
you might be able to get it, but you might be waiting in
yes,
line for a very long time.
You might be able to get the dialysis, but you might be waiting in line for behind 6 or 7 other people just trying to get it, if not more. Mm-hmm. So if you have a specific type of need, the first thing you should check to see is to see if that particular type of clinic is open in town. because they're going to be able to address your need at a smaller scale, mm-hmm. and that's going to be so important to the crowding of the hospitals, just general public safety, and it'll make it so much easier for you. Like if you do have dialysis and your place was shut down, but you know their backup location, and you call them and they say, yes, we're open, you can come over right now, it'll be a lot better than getting to a hospital that could have 60 people in the ER, mm-hmm. if not more, yeah. and have to wait there trying to get triaged and hopefully get bumped up.
Right. Because frankly, what I learned from the state people last week was, it's like all roads lead to Rome. If the state has a major emergency, the hospitals in Anchorage will all experience a surge from around the whole state. So,
yes.
You know, again, just trying to be ready, whatever your medical needs are, having some alternatives,
yes.
And not just relying on the hospital. This was a recent study showing that people felt across the board, all economic levels, all felt, well, it's a hospital. They'll be ready. They'll help me, you know, and it's just that. Not that they don't want to help you, it's just
yes.
that they may not be able to. I have an email, and I'm just going to read it here. It's coming from Linda Van Winkle, who's a fifth grade teacher. So this must have been from the early part of our discussion when we're talking about how to help kids be comfortable with mm-hmm. emergencies. My fifth graders have been studying earthquakes, volcanoes, tsunamis, tornadoes, and hurricanes for the last 4 weeks. Part of this study is to create a PSA to explain what causes the natural disaster they researched and how to prepare for it. We'll be listening to today's show at 2:00. Well, we have to say hello to Linda Van Winkle's fifth graders. You are who we are aiming this show at, part of it. You know, it's really just the individual, the family, even the child in a family that we know we can have earthquakes in Alaska. So
I actually want to see those. I wouldn't mind sharing them on our Facebook page.
Mm-hmm. All right. Cool. Well, yeah. I'll send Linda's email address to you, and maybe you guys can connect.
That sounds great.
That's awesome. Linda, you're on it. That's great. let me think. What other things do we want to talk about? I know we have to get to pets. Oh, here's something I thought about. This goes along with the medication idea. If you're in a shelter, smoking is not allowed. And, you know, some people are very addicted to cigarettes. So one thing I read suggested, for example, if you're a person that has lung issues and you can't be around smoking, you might include in your kit nicotine gum to give to people who might be helping you so that they don't have to have a cigarette while they're helping you. Or if you yourself are a heavy smoker, you might have nicotine gum in your kit just so that when you're in a shelter you won't be able to smoke. You might be able to deal with that. I have a question about the opioid epidemic that mm-hmm. we're experiencing. And I realize that many sort of pain medications, a patient can only get a couple days supply. So that was an issue that Lexi addressed. Mm-hmm. Talk to your doctor or make sure you have an image of your prescription so that if you do get to a shelter, you know exactly what it is and what your dosage is. But I also wondered whether the city is looking at this fairly large population of people who have addictions, whether it's heroin or opioid, what's the planning for that? I mean, we're seeing the impacts with mm-hmm. break-ins and, you know, petty thievery. So, I don't know. What do you think?
This is definitely an interesting subject, and it's one of those things that, like, we can't provide illegal substances.
There will not be clinics for people to go and get.
We can't provide that to people. So it would likely be, you know, we just have... we'd have to work with the hospitals to mm-hmm. see about withdrawals and talk to them about how they would have to handle that. So that's probably a question better geared towards someone in the medical profession.
Right. The city would not be the source for emergency, you know, illegal drug.
Yeah.
It sounds crazy to say that. It's just that the need could arise in a terrible earthquake situation or something.
And that's a very real possibility. And until you had mentioned it in your email before this, I hadn't ever considered it. Mm-hmm. And I actually talked to my coworker about it and was asking. And I was like, we can't legally provide that, but we can definitely help, you know, getting them to hospitals for making sure they have their withdrawal care. Mm-hmm.
And if they can't, making sure that there's a room, a place where folks who
they can be safe.
Yeah, mm-hmm. where they can be safe. And mm-hmm. and the general population is not afraid of, you know, why they're yelling, why they're moaning, or why they're having pacing.
I also thought about, you know, we have, you see it in the community, mental health issues. They are out in the public. I don't know, you know, whether that's a population, and I'm looking both at Heidi and Lexi, that emergency management leaders look at and try to think about. They may not be well connected with a clinic. They may not, they may be just kind of on their own. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, thoughts about that. You could have a relative, perhaps, who is in that situation, and you're sort of thinking about what's going to happen to Uncle John if you know, we have a massive earthquake.
Right, right. And so for the person, we encourage them to have a person. Make sure you have a natural support network. If my spouse can't be with me, then can my uncle be with me? Mm-hmm. I know I have mental health issues, and I need to make sure that there is somebody that I know.
Mm-hmm.
So it helps. And also, we've really been working with the city and the state about sheltering issues. And when you are making shelters, make sure that you have an area where it's calm, where folks mm-hmm. who are do need that calm space for their mental health, for their other disabilities, that there is something, that there is a calm place where they can go outside of all the noise and all the general population.
Mm-hmm.
Not separating them, not sheltering.
Not isolating them,
but making sure that there is a place that they can go that's quiet.
Yeah, right. Just making sure that they're accommodated.
Yeah.
Right, because I'm sure shelter, I have never had to go to a shelter in an emergency myself, but I imagine they're noisy and crowded, and just having a quiet place that's a little bit away from the hustle and bustle of the main shelter
right.
could
yes.
be a significant thing for a person who has anxiety or depression or mm-hmm. things like that. So,
and well, that might be something that they discuss with you during intake if it doesn't violate
HIPAA?
Yes.
Right. If you have those needs, it might be good to yes. talk to somebody if you're mm-hmm. in a rescue situation.
Yeah, I'm sorry to interrupt.
No.
During the sheltering, one of the things that we've mentioned is exactly that. And when you're doing intake, making sure that you are asking those questions about disabilities, because they're not something that a lot of people automatically tell you, especially in Alaska. We're tough, we're strong.
We're self-reliant.
And to just go out there and say, well, I have this, especially mental health issues are hard, substance mm-hmm. abuse, there's cognitive issues are
right.
hard to say I have this. So just during intake, making sure that you ask questions that aren't insulting, but are helpful to find out if they have any additional needs.
Okay. Well, we're going to take a tiny break right now. We're going to come back and talk further about how to be prepared yourself in an emergency. And we are going to focus a little bit on pets, too. Pets and animals who are relying on you to take care of them. So you're listening to Hometown Alaska. This is Kathleen McCoy.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. Today's topic is the scary how to be ready if the next great earthquake hits us, or gosh, let's hope it's just the earthquake and not some of the other things that we worry about today. So we have Lexi Traynor here with the city's Office of Emergency Management. We have Laura Atwood from the Anchorage Animal Care and Control, and Heidi Frost with us from the Statewide Independent Living Council. We've been talking a lot about generally families how to get ready. Also, if there's someone in your family that has a special need or maybe living independently but has mobility issues, how to think about that, how to plan for it in your emergency planning. One thing that relates both to people who may have mobility or disability issues and people with pets is this idea that perhaps you need a network of friends and people who are looking out for you, who may be able to help you, who know your situation. In the case of pets, they may be able to take your pet for a while. I know I've often been in this. When I'm on vacation, my friend watches my pet, and when she goes on vacation, you know, I watch her pets. So, you know, those kind of community networks might be a good thing to foster. Is that actively encouraged, Heidi?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And that would include really neighbors, relatives. Would it include a social worker or?
Well, it depends on your disability and on your situation. But definitely friends and family and neighbors are great to have. Mm-hmm. That they know your situation and that they know that you might be contacting them if there's an emergency. And also, some people work with direct service professionals or personal care attendants or CNA certified nurse aides. And those folks, one of the things that we worry about is if you have a paid professional working with you, a direct service professional, they might be worrying about their family during an emergency.
Oh, that's true.
And so what do they do? And how does this, and so we work with agencies to say, are you thinking about an emergency and who's going to leave and who is going to stay? And how do they make sure their family's okay and the person that they're caring for or working with is okay? So we really encourage agencies to go through a continuity plan.
Right, because if you're thinking, I mean, if you think about it, every nurse at the hospital may have a family or pets at home or something. You know, everybody's, pushed to the max in an emergency. And we expect first responders to be there. We expect public safety officers to be there. But you have to remember that they're also under the same difficult circumstances you are. So that's another reason to be as prepared yourself as you can be. Laura, let's talk about developing a plan for, if you've got pets. I mean, it could, in Anchorage, it could be horses on the hillside, right?
Right, absolutely. So I'm going to touch base on what we were just talking about, which is
sure.
a network. Because
sure.
if you're at work and your pets are at home and that earthquake happens, you may not make it home to them. So it's really good to know, do I have neighbors who are retired? Do I have neighbors who work from home? And having something in place with them beforehand, if something goes wrong, you have a key to my house, you can get in, you can get to my animals.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're thinking about your network, make sure that includes your animals too, definitely.
Right. Okay.
So yeah, planning for your pets.
And that could include medications.
All those
not
things.
Not just food and water.
Right. You know, I'm sitting here looking at the pet emergency kit checklist, and it's so many of the things that we talk about with people, too, right? It's food and water for them. It's their medication. It's a crate, a carrier for them. If you have two dogs, you want two crates. You know, you want the number of kennels that you have pets, because if you have to take your animals to a temporary shelter, they may not have enough kennels for the animals who are going to arrive.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be better for the people setting up that temporary shelter and better for your animals to be prepared.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're talking about that, some things that people may not think about in advance, do you have one of those cats who absolutely hates to go into their carrier? Now you've just gotten word that you've been evacuated and you're chasing your cat down who's gone under the couch, right?
Right.
So work with your pet beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
Get them comfortable with these types of things
mm-hmm.
so that you're not fighting with that when you're already stressed and your animal is now stressed too.
That's good. I'm thinking about, I had an old dog that was, when 4th of July came around, she just went bonkers, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I imagine if there was a major earthquake, the anxiety of animals
right.
can go up.
Right.
And if they're reading you, they're picking up anxiety mm-hmm. from you, too. So.
And so then you also have to remember to be a little more careful yourself in handling them. Mm-hmm. Now you have, even if it's your own animal, you have an animal that's scared now. Mm-hmm. So just be a little more careful in how you're handling that animal.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing to think about is, you know, we're always telling people, make sure that all of your contact information is up to date with your animal. There's a chance that you may get separated from your animals during an emergency situation like this. So you want to make sure that that collar and tags that they have on, that their microchip, everything is up to date.
Mm-hmm.
What you haven't thought about is you're going to need to prove that this animal is yours. So in those ready-to-go kits mm-hmm. that Lexi was talking about, do you have pictures of your animals? You know, especially pictures of you and your animal together. Do you have their records showing that they're up to date on rabies? Anything that you can have that's going to show, this is my dog, this is my cat. You may need those at some point mm-hmm. in yeah. an emergency situation.
Yeah. And we live in a highly military community. And so as a military wife, when my husband deployed, you know, the dogs, I mean, it's ours, but it's his, you know, it's his best friend.
The truth comes out.
Yes. But so all of the tags had his information. So when he deployed, I had to redo all of yeah. the tags to make sure that they could get a hold of me because mm-hmm. his phone was temporarily turned off.
Wow. See, that's yeah. that's a good point. Now, if there are shelters for humans, will there be shelters for animals, Lexi?
Yes. Possibly. Maybe. Kind of. So it all depends. If it's a smaller incident, they likely won't open up a pet shelter. So it would be up to the owner to either put the pet into boarding or have it stay with friends. However, if it's large enough, the municipality will open up an emergency pet shelter. They will try to put it as close to the human shelter as possible because you are still expected to care for your animal.
So say it's an elementary school. Just imagine that maybe they
okay.
people are sheltering at an elementary school.
All right.
Then somewhere on that campus, they would try to have.
It might not necessarily be on that campus, but they will try to make it as close to the location as possible. It's kind of hard in a what-if situation because.
Right, we don't know.
Yeah, we have to kind of decide while it's going
on. It wouldn't necessarily be at animal care and control.
Not necessarily.
No. Uh-huh, okay. Because I was thinking if the owner is still responsible for the care, they have to be able to get to
yeah,
this animal.
Yeah, so they are responsible for the care of their animal, but of course if it's a little too far away, then it might fall on the volunteers. But that's when having all of, you know, the important stuff like their food and water or... you know, different things in place is really important because with the Sockeye fire, all of the sled dogs.
Oh boy, that was a dramatic, mm-hmm. yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, they were able to set it up kind of outside, especially considering how many dogs were available mm-hmm. Or there needing help. But yeah, it's a bit different. And then you, of course, want to make sure that you have all the, you know, a copy of the paperwork so when you do show up, you know, you can at least, you know, hey, this is my dog. He has his rabies shot.
Right, right,
and have all of that available.
And I did read that horses are not would not be sheltered. It would be the owner's responsibility in at their home site.
Yes,
to care for a horse.
Yeah. So pet shelters only take certain types of pets. They won't take like exotic pets or pets that have been. Tamed?
Trained?
You know, like wild animals
oh,
that have
okay.
been taken in and tamed.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. They won't take those or horses, things that are, you know, kind of on the larger end.
Birds? Do they take birds? Do you know?
I believe they would probably take birds.
Mm-hmm.
Don't quote me on that.
Mm-hmm.
But
snakes?
I don't believe they take snakes.
That's probably going to fall in as an exotic
yeah.
animal.
That would mm-hmm. be an exotic animal. Okay.
Yeah, just to, because we want to make sure that everybody is also safe within the environment. And we don't want, like, let's say somebody brought their snake. Well, some dogs might naturally hunt a snake.
Oh, that would not be the situation you
yeah.
would.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And it would be a little harder to take care of a snake. And some people might not be familiar with them or what to do. And most people are familiar with, like, dogs and cats.
Right.
So,
right.
And a bird.
Right.
Yeah.
So really important to have them up to date on mm-hmm. their rabies.
Mm-hmm.
And again, in an emergency kit, their medications if there are any and things like that.
Right. So, yeah. And, you know, as Lexi mentioned, there may or may not be a temporary shelter set up. So have people in place who you can say, hey, I live on the hillside, and if I get evacuated from a fire, can we come crash at your place, you know, for a couple nights? And have a couple people set in place, because people get tired of you and your house after a while.
Wait, 3 days and you've been
right. So yeah, it's just be responsible for and be accountable for where you and your animals are going to go in this type of situation.
Yeah. One of the big things that you keep hearing us stress is know your neighbors, know your friends, have places, you know, have a community network, because those are the biggest and most important things in bouncing back from a disaster.
Right, and if you have older neighbors, especially, get to know them. They may need help in an emergency.
Yep.
So I'm trying to think. We were talking briefly. Lexi, I'm looking at Lexi, because we have a few more minutes. It's kind of like, what are the most important takeaways we want people to leave this show? And one of the things we talked about was getting food and water.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about it's a gallon per person or animal per day. Alaska recommends that you be prepared for 7 days to shelter in place as long as you can safely.
Yes.
So that's food and water, sanitary conditions, taking care of all of that stuff.
Medications.
Medications, very important medications.
Extra batteries.
Extra batteries.
Chargers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Solar chargers, maybe.
Yes.
I mean, something I did read talked about wheelchair batteries being charged on auto batteries, or replacing an auto wheelchair battery with an auto battery. But the problem with that is that they wheelchair batteries deep charge, this article said. Auto batteries do not, so you wouldn't get the same, you know, it might, in an emergency it might work, but think about those scenarios. You know,
maybe go to a chair if you're possible that's manual.
Maybe have a backup manual.
Maybe have a backup
chair,
manual
which doesn't
chair.
Need any
right.
Special
right.
Yeah.
That might work. If you're low vision, think about flashlights that are brighter, those intense ones. Having a magnifying glass, having a sheet of paper that's a magnifier, so you can read the different documents that are put in front of you. Or and so those are other things to consider.
Right.
One of the things I wanted to bring up before, as far as pets, is service animals.
Oh, good. Thank you.
If you have an honest-to-goodness service animal, and we're having problems with folks thinking they have a service animal because they have the vest, but if you have a service animal that does something for your disability and does a specific task for you as a person with a disability, that service animal would actually go into the shelter with you.
With people.
And if you go into an ambulance or a plane, that dog goes with you. We had a incident on a training down in Kenai where a friend of mine with who was blind and had a service animal, and they were evacuating using an ambulance, and the ambulance driver said, "We don't put dogs in my ambulance." And he was like, "No, it's a service animal. It's not a dog. It's part of me."
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you have to think about it with service dogs.
Will you be required to prove in any way that this isn't?
Oh,
no.
Oh, no.
No, you are not.
No,
you're not required
to
no.
prove. Okay, thank you. Okay. Well, as you can tell, the music is playing and we are out of time. I'd like to thank our guests, all experts on how to anticipate and plan for your personal and family needs in a disaster or an emergency. Thanks to Lexi Traynor from the City's Emergency Programs Manager Office of Emergency Services, Laura Atwood with Anchorage Animal Care and Control, and Heidi Frost with the Statewide Independent Living Council. I'll be back as your host next week when we spend time with the students and the creator of the Alaska Jazz Workshop here in Anchorage and learn how jazz musicians communicate with each other. Find us on the web at alaskapublic.org. Ammon Swenson and Dave Waldron are our audio engineers today. I'm Kathleen McCoy. Thanks for joining us on Hometown Alaska.
Okay, thank you, guys. Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.